Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others. Introducing you to a range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is, can your sensory profile affect your mental health? My guest is Lurika Fink, counseling psychologist from Johannesburg. Welcome back, Lurika.
Hello, thank you so much for having me again.
To our listeners, after our conversation, Lurika will give us two tips on getting curious about your sensory profile, and then it will be fun question time. Lurika, for those listeners who haven't heard our episode on postnatal depression, I'd like you to tell us more about your work. But first, I want to mention the fact that you have a first honors degree in the social psychology of clothing.
I do.
How did that happen?
That happened because I sat in grade 12 and my parents expected me to go and study the following year. And I had absolutely no idea what to study. And then I went for a career assessment. And all the feedback that I received didn't feel like it settled well with my soul. And then my cousin actually once sat and she said, come, let's go through the booklets of the different universities and see if there's something that makes you feel excited. And that's when consumer science came up. And consumer science is all about what we as humans need and what we as humans engage in. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, all the basics around food, housing, and clothing. And that's when I started to study consumer science. And then after that, I still wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do with my life. So naturally, we decided to do an honors degree. And then I realized that the combination of what we need and what happens in our psyche was something that just sat so well with me. So then when I had a personal crisis in my life, I realized now I need to make serious decisions. And that's when I decided to study psychology. And I haven't looked back since. It's been the biggest blessing.
And would you like to tell the listeners what you do?
I am a counseling psychologist. I have my own practice here in Johannesburg, and I'm engaged in many different exciting projects outside of the practice as well. I think to keep things fun and to also just serve some of my own passions. What I also started was a website or a platform called Snuggle Sense, and it's all about family sensory awareness. And what we have on the website, we have products. At the moment, it's only baby products, but it's home and locally made baby products like weighted bunnies and sensory bunnies and blankets. And I also have a comprehensive baby stimulation program that you receive the box of tools and you can complete that at home. You can also gift this box. It's quite small. I've sent multiple of these boxes overseas for moms who are quite isolated after immigration. So that's something I'm very passionate about, is designing and making products that, make people or children at this stage, especially, just help them with their sensory profile.
And talking about sensory profiles, this brings us right to our topic. Now, statistics show that a significant number of people worldwide are experiencing mental health challenges. And you believe that an individual's way of receiving and responding to sensory information can significantly affect their mental health.
Yes, definitely. This is a topic I'm particularly passionate about because the way I was trained was a very linear, almost two-dimensional thinking about psychology. So we have the DSM, and if there's specific symptoms presenting in the room, then this person or this patient has this condition. But I've realized over the last few years that you cannot discount the physiology around what happens in mental health. I heard something the other day about Dr. Daniel Amen in America. He's a psychiatrist and he's done over 250,000 brain scans. And he says that psychiatry is the only medical profession that treats an organ they don't examine. And if you think about that, we prescribe schedule 5 and 6 medications to patients, but not a single brain scan was done. How do we know that it is even what we call your initial diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, but not in fact a comorbid diagnosis? So it could be that mental health conditions are in fact symptoms of physiology and the physiological impact of our environment on our lives. And this is very, very important to discuss. And let me just give an example, for instance. Now you have a mother 2 or 3 years after she's given birth to her children, and she gets diagnosed with postnatal depression, which links to our previous discussion on postnatal depression. But in fact, it's not that she's depressed, but she's just so completely and totally overstimulated on a auditory, visual, taste, proprioception, a modulation level or modular level, that now we go and we treat a symptom when in fact the problem is that she struggles with sensory processing.
That's a very interesting take on it. And I must say the wheels in my brain are whirring at this stage. Let's start by asking what you mean by an individual's unique sensory profile.
So every single person on earth, like your fingerprints are unique, you also have a unique sensory profile. And what that means, and I speak here from a mental health and a psychological perspective, but occupational therapists might have a different definition, but it's how your body relates to your environment and how your environment relates to your body. So if you think about all your senses, if we think about an occupational therapeutic space, they in fact add 2 additional senses. The one is proprioception, which is how deep pressure affects the body. And then the other one is from a modular level, how you sense and experience your environment, which is quite complex. And I'm not going to get into that here today. But the reality is, if you, for instance, struggle with visual overstimulation, let's say you walk into a house where somebody is a hoarder and there's just clutter absolutely everywhere. What happens is the filter in the brain struggles to filter out unimportant information and allow important information. And then it becomes like a highway. That's why I so wish we could really shed a light on this situation, because you can imagine if somebody struggles with hoarding, it will affect their relationships if those around them cannot deal with a visual clutter. They will then end up avoiding this person, which affects that relationship because of a mental health condition. It could be that the person that is the hoarder does so to, in fact, fill up the space in their environment, because large open spaces affect their proprioception or their modular input. And then we have a situation where, in fact, this is sensory processing that causes mental health conditions that then affects the person on a basic human need level of connection. And this is so relevant. Instead of just focusing on how can we slap a mental health disorder onto this person's life, let's think about what is the entire environment holistically doing to this individual and this human being.
Yeah, and I think the word that you used there is holistic. So it gives one a much better chance of being helpful in this situation.
Yes, yes. And we're going to get a little bit into hypersensitive, which is over-responsive to sensory input, and then hyposensitive, which is under-responsive to sensory input. This is, I'm really just scraping the surface here, and I want to just invite anybody who wants to know more to please reach out to occupational therapists in your area. I can share this with you. I went for my own occupational therapeutic assessment now in January of this year. And I learned so much about myself. Suddenly, my entire life made sense. Suddenly, a lot of what I liked, what I avoided, what I disliked, what I engaged in, what I sought out, suddenly it all made so much sense. And I really do invite anybody listening, if you wonder about this and you feel like maybe you're being misunderstood by your environment, or you feel like you're struggling with your environment, do go for an assessment and speak to the experts to find out about it.
I was going to ask you how listeners can determine their sensory profile. So I suppose an occupational therapist would be the right person to do that.
Yes. So what you do is you request what they call an adult SI assessment, which is an adult sensory integration assessment. And then what you do, I think mine happened over a period of 2 days, but you can do it in 1 day. And then you go for feedback. And what I find with a lot of occupational therapists, with children, they often go for weekly sessions. But with adults, you have lived with this condition or your sensory profile for so long, often with a very minimal intervention, you can then learn how to adjust your lifestyle. You can also learn how to communicate with those around you that, let's say, auditory stimulation is too much for you. Therefore, typically you won't opt to go to the music festival or to an IMAX theater because it doesn't sit well with your soul and your sensory profile.
So today, as you said, we're going to look specifically at hypersensitivity and hyposensitivity. Would you say that listeners would have a clear idea of where they fall on the spectrum?
They might, after they've heard what both of these profiles, how they manifest. But I do believe a lot of people will know once they find out about it. Because what I do experience a lot is people just go through life and they go on autopilot and they just try their absolute best and they try to make it through the day. But once you find out, hang on, maybe I really enjoy driving fast in my car because your proprioceptive need is so high. Now you understand why you tend to get speeding tickets. It's not because you try to be aggressive on the road. It's because that sensory input, in fact, calms your nervous system. What I find is people that struggle with proprioception, they often the guys who want to go do advanced driving courses or do wrestling or, you know, anything that has deep pressure input into their lives. And then obviously the opposite is also true. You know, that friend of yours that really dislikes a hug or that gives you this side hug from the shoulder, you know, that's often because they are hyposensitive. They struggle with that deep pressure input. They dislike the feeling of pressure on their skin and on their muscles and on their bones. So they avoid that. You often find that somebody is diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder when in fact they have sensory processing disorder. It's not because they're being awkward at a social event. It's not because they can't manage in relationships. It's because they cannot deal with the physical sensory integration with what comes with parties and social events or intimacy, for instance. If you're hyposensitive, you'll typically really struggle in your intimate life because sex or intimate experiences, it feels like a betrayal on the body. It's not because the person doesn't want to connect. It's also not because they don't love that individual. You often hear this. I cannot emphasize this enough. You often hear this when a couple got married, they had a very healthy sex life. But the moment children were introduced into the household, the mother is not interested in intimate connection. But just become aware, she has a baby or a toddler that touches her out completely by the end of that day. Mm. Her body is so overstimulated that she cannot fathom having sex with her husband that evening. It actually feels like a self-betrayal to do that. And what then ends up happening is the marriage suffers. The husband becomes resentful and disgruntled because he thinks his wife no longer loves him, which is the absolute opposite of what's true. I think that mother seeks out adult conversation. She just wants to be held. She wants to be supported. She wants to be loved. She cannot spend another part of herself at the end of that day. And this is why I say, I so wish we could think differently about mental health. We have to start speaking about what the physical body does to the mind and the psyche.
So let's first look at hypersensitivity or over-responsiveness. As you've explained, these individuals, these who are over-responsive, they may experience overwhelm when exposed to environments that others may find normal. Could you give us some examples?
Yeah, so some examples would be anxiety and panic, for instance. So in a hypersensitive individuals, crowded places or noisy environments can cause panic attacks because they struggle to process the excessive sensory information. Now I'm going to say this again. The panic attack that is typically often diagnosed as general anxiety disorder is therefore the symptom of the problem. It is not the problem. It's the adaptation to the environment. The other example is avoidance and isolation. So to avoid sensory discomfort, individuals may withdraw from social situations, leading to isolation and possibly contributing to depression. You know, I always use this example. Now you have someone moving into a house in Benoni. Now I'm going to use that as an example because Benoni is very close to our Tambo International Airport here in Johannesburg. And about 3 months in, he suddenly gets diagnosed with depression. But then you realize, hang on, this individual is being completely overstimulated with the noise of airplanes flying over his roof on a minute-to-minute basis. Does he then have depression or does he have sensory processing disorder? And those are very different things.
Yeah, and they treat it completely differently.
Completely differently. I mean, the long-term effects even of that treatment is very, what we call, significant. Mm-hmm. If you put someone on an antidepressant, it alters the structure of the brain. But if you go for an occupational therapeutic process where you have specific exercises and you have specific sensory inputs that you engage in, that has absolutely no permanent damaging alterations to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So stress and irritability is the third one. So being constantly engaging in uncomfortable sensory experiences can lead to chronic irritability, which affects general mental well-being. And stress and irritability is often an indicator of depression. Once again, is this person depressed or are they irritated because they're overstimulated? So then hypersensitivity, which on the other hand is individuals who are hypersensitive, may seek sensory experiences to feel more connected or stimulated by their environment, which can also affect mental health. And can I jump into some of those examples?
Yes, I'd just like to clarify that hypersensitivity is under responsiveness.
Yes, it's under responsiveness. So over here, I want to give you an example. I once worked with a patient in hospital that had 17 car accidents in the period of his, I think he had his license for about 15 years. So that's one serious car accident at least per year. So then as a mental health team, we spoke about what Freud would say about this, and we thought maybe he has suicidal ideation, and we were only focusing on the mental health situation around what we saw presenting itself in hospital. And when I look back on that now, I realize maybe this individual didn't have suicidal ideation at all, and he felt great remorse and shame about all the car accidents, but perhaps he was hyposensitive. He had to engage in risk-taking behavior in order to regulate his nervous system. So risk-taking behavior is seeking intense sensory input that can lead to risk-taking behavior, which can be dangerous or socially inappropriate, affecting social relationships and self-esteem. When this individual, if we had supported him in hyposensitive understanding, he might not even have had the need to then drive so fast or take risks while he was on the road. You can also imagine someone's sensory profile can get them in such great trouble where they can either kill themselves or someone else, or somebody can get very hurt in the process. When it's not because they're aggressive, it's not because they seek or enjoy risk-taking behavior, but that's the only way in which they regulate their nervous system. Then the second example here is difficulty with social connections. So an underreaction to social cues, which is part of sensory processing, can challenge the formation and maintenance of relationships, leading to feelings of loneliness and depression. This is exactly the example I gave earlier on. If you have someone who struggles with hugs in a culture where hugging is the norm when you greet someone, or dancing, for instance, the act of dancing is probably one of the best examples of proprioception. It's deep pressure. There's a lot of exertion of energy in the process. It's usually fast paced. It's exciting. And now you have a hyposensitive individual who really struggles with such input. And they then would typically avoid, or they don't necessarily understand what this means. And these are quite complex, so I just want to mention this. Typically, you would think that a hypersensitive person will then avoid that input, which is also true. But a hyposensitive person would also avoid it because they might not understand the social cues that go with it. Oh. And then the third example is frustration and aggression. So especially in children, a lack of sensory stimulation can manifest as frustration or aggression, affecting their emotional regulation and social interaction. Now, let's just use this as an example. Now a child is diagnosed with ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactive disorder, right? Or hypersensitivity disorder. But in fact, they actually have sensory processing disorder. They just need to learn, how does my body relate to the environment and how can I soothe my nervous system? The moment that happens, the child cannot be diagnosed with ADHD. I don't know if people know this, but in countries like France, ADHD is not a condition that we diagnose. We look at the system. We look holistically at the individual. Now, if that child is diagnosed from the age of 4, he gets placed on exceptionally high-profile medication to help him regulate, when in fact it can be a very, I want to say, kind on the mind process instead of having to go on expensive and mind altering medications. I am not saying here that no child has ADHD. This, I just want to add this here. There are cases of clinical ADHD that can be diagnosed, but we have to also consider the alternative. The interaction typically with mental health conditions, I've already mentioned ASD, which is your autism spectrum disorders, ADHD, and then anxiety disorders. We typically diagnose these three things very quickly without even considering what is the physiological impact of this person. And are we in fact seeing the mental health disorder first, or are we seeing sensory processing disorder first? If you think about this, hundreds of years ago, we each would have lived on a farm fairly far away from each other. We would have had a lot of quiet time. We would have heard the silence every single night. There wouldn't have been lights on anywhere. And we would have had ample time to remain mindful and present within ourselves. But today, I don't know if anybody knows this, but we get bombarded with over 30,000 advertisements a day.
Goodness.
A single individual. That is shocking. No wonder we have people who are overstimulated. Screens are present. We don't switch off fully at night. Our circadian rhythms cannot reset because we have lights on everywhere for the purpose of security or the purpose of mobility. We are constantly overstimulated on an auditory level. I always say to people, when we go away, we try to go somewhere where it is so quiet at night that you can hear the silence. And I say to my husband often, I'm shocked that it takes me about a week of my ears ringing every night because my mind is literally craving silence. It's absolutely craving silence. But that's the other thing. Hundreds of years ago, we wouldn't have had access to all the different flavors and foods that we have now. Now we engage in sugar consumption on a minute-to-minute basis. We have any possible food sort to our fingertips straight throughout the year. Where typically many years ago, if it wasn't winter, you wouldn't have seen an avocado on the shelves. Now you can buy an avocado straight throughout the year. And maybe we're completely overstimulating ourselves. That's why the mental health crisis is, what's the word? It's getting out of hand. we are not able to support people enough.
This makes such a lot of sense. I'd still like you to say a little more about hyposensitivity or under-responsiveness. How exactly does that work? What is it that the person really needs, and why are their senses understimulated?
So it can be multiple factors, but what's also recently emerged in research, so let's just state this from the beginning. A hypersensitive individual has too much dopamine, so they avoid sensory input to lower the dopamine in the brain. But a hyposensitive individual doesn't have enough dopamine in the brain, so they seek sensory input. So we often say that someone with ADHD, for instance, has sensory-seeking behavior. Now, once again, the question remains, is it because they have too little dopamine in the brain, or is it because they have ADHD, or is it because they have sensory processing difficulties? Let's say an individual who is hyposensitive, that has less dopamine in the brain, engages in sensory stimulation activities that then increases the dopamine in the brain. Are they then still diagnosed with ADHD? What is the root here? And that's why I'm so grateful that we can talk about this today, so that we can start engaging differently with mental health conditions. Typically, to increase dopamine, and this is why I can't really provide examples, because every single person's profile is so different. Mm. But you have to also look at yourself holistically. So what food do you eat? How much sugar do you consume? How much alcohol do you consume? This is something I'm engaging with often as well, is to help people just become aware of the impact of alcohol on their nervous system. And I want to invite anybody listening here today, listen to or take notes, just track your mood the day after you've consumed alcohol. Just ask yourself, what emotions am I feeling now? And I don't want to say, give examples. I want to leave this open-ended to people. So alcohol is one of the, it is a class one carcinogen in the world. And what that means is it's a higher risk, what do we call it, substance that we take in that causes cancer. Why does it cause cancer? Because it breaks down specific neurotransmitters in the brain. Now, you can imagine that that's exactly what alcohol does. Alcohol lowers the dopamine in the brain. Maybe if you give yourself 6 months chance and you don't drink at all and you eat high iron, you know, food supplements, high protein. Protein is incredible for dopamine and for attention. So a high protein diet. See what impact it really has on your life. Maybe go for a blood test before you start and then a blood test 6 months later and see what happens and see what the effect of this would be on your life.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.mariehetsneyman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. Now, back to my guest. Larika, in your private practice, how do you approach the influence of sensory profiles on mental health conditions?
Well, nowadays, I refer straight to an OT for an assessment. And once we have that assessment, we have a whole different conversation in the practice. Often I find that people resist this slightly because it's fairly new. And I think a lot of people feel, gosh, I've just entered into a psychotherapeutic space. I don't know if I can enter into an occupational therapeutic space as well. But those that are willing to go for the assessments then find that they can also help themselves to a larger extent. Someone said to me the other day, you know, you're working yourself out of a job by doing this. Mm. And I was like, isn't that wonderful? That would be great. The mental health crisis is so vast that we need to start making a difference here. You know, we need to start getting ourselves out of a job and be innovative and find new ways to then earn an income. So that's exactly what it is, that I doubt that the mental health problem would ever be eradicated.
No.
But I do believe that this gatekeeping of professionals and their profession needs to end. We need to take hands with other professionals. We need to be open to other understandings about things. We also have to challenge each other and say, hang on, why are we not doing brain scans instead of just prescribing a lot of medication? We have to be responsible in our fields. Yeah, to be able to really make a difference and help people help themselves.
Larika, do you have any advice for parents?
Well, my main advice for parents is don't be defensive about your child's behavior because it could be something physiological and not emotional. You're not a bad parent. You'll be a bad parent if you don't get the right help for your child, but don't be defensive. I often find that parents or people are like, no, there's nothing wrong with my child, when their child is the one hanging from someone else's two-story roof. You know, so we're also in complete denial about what's going on. Take your child to see an occupational therapist early on in the game. You know, 40 years ago, occupational therapy was not a common thing. I think there might have been a few individuals in other countries. This was not something we did in South Africa. It wasn't common. But I'm just thinking about my own life, how much different it would have been if I understood this. My parents would have had such an easier time understanding all of us. If they knew that, hang on, this is what this behavior means, that's what that behavior means. If the child does this, they might have done that. And I often speak to my parents about this. They also learn a lot about their own sensory profiles, also about what they tended to avoid and what they engaged in and why they enjoyed it so much. And it's also so beautiful. You know, we all interconnected. This actually came about when I took my own daughter for an OT assessment. And in the feedback, I was like, that's a thing. That's something that people battle with. And both my husband and I were like, what? Is this real? So we're not crazy. And it was such a beautiful moment where there's a lot of self-forgiveness, I think, that happens when you learn this about yourself. And that's beautiful. Like connecting yourself back to yourself is such a treat.
Yeah. Where can listeners learn more about your work?
Online. My website is www.joburgpsychologist.today, and there's also snugglesense.co.za. That's mainly where we're busy. And then there's another platform I'm engaging in called dynamicdevelopment.today. That's where we are creating personal development programs to be able to assist more people. So we typically have a sensory integration for adults course that will be launching in the next month, where individuals can purchase the course, but they also then have access directly to an occupational therapist to be able to facilitate discussion. So it's definitely not occupational therapy, but this person can guide you and say, you know, maybe you should consider this or consider that. And we also have a course that might be established, or we're going to start production soon, on sensory integration for children to empower parents in the household. I find a lot of parents don't know what to do. So people laugh when they come into my house. We have gym balls and swings and socks for kids to crawl through and all of these, you know, like, what do you call those? It's like a bubble chair that kids sit on. And to provide your child with the environment that makes them happy and makes them feel regulated. And there's a lot that parents can do at home. Like, for instance, avoid specific foods or have activities that you do in the afternoon or in the evening with your child to help them regulate, which is so lovely for everybody. Yeah.
And Larika, are those courses that you're talking about, are they online?
Yes, it's all online. The main reason is we want to be able to serve as many people as possible. So dynamicdevelopment.today is an initiative to link people to themselves and to the solution. And that has to happen online because there aren't professionals in many, well, in most areas in the world, there aren't professionals. So here we put the professional and the knowledge at your fingertips.
I'm going to attach those links to the podcast and include them in the podcast notes.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Now it's time for your tips on getting more curious about your sensory profile.
So make note or take note of the things, the environments, the experiences, and the people and the places you avoid. And also take note of the things that you seek and that you look for in your life.
Are you ready for your fun question?
Yes.
I know you love baking from your up close and personal profile. And I also happen to know that you respect the work of Freud. So
very much so.
Yeah. Let's go to a fantasy world. If you could invite Freud into your kitchen and bake him something for tea time, Larika, what would you treat him to?
Oh, I know exactly what I will make. So for my daughter's first birthday, we had a Mad Hatter's tea party.
Mm.
And all the cookies I baked were Alice in Wonderland cookies. And that's definitely what I will invite him for tea. Royal icing biscuits with Mad Hatters and bunnies and potions, and it was lovely.
Lucky Freud.
Lucky Freud.
Thank you, Larika. You've opened a completely new door to me today, and I really do hope with all my heart that the many people who are struggling with mental health conditions, and as you said, you know, being told that they have specific conditions, will listen to this and have a holistic solution at their fingertips. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
To our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd love you to subscribe to this podcast series and rate it where you download your podcasts. If you found this episode insightful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free articles and podcast episodes on how to live a happier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. Calm, Clear and Helpful is compiled, hosted and edited by me, with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.